Hello again. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. 13 minutes after 9 o'clock, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue on kind of a gray, dour Wednesday, and we'll try to do our best to make that worse. It's the Roundtable panel. And you can always join the conversation by emailing us, panel@wamc.org. Do me a favor. If you've written the same thing 10 days in a row, give it a rest. If you have something new, feel free to email panel@wamc.org. The last thing we want to hear is repetition. You'll get plenty of that from the panel. And speaking of the panel, we welcome the panel today. The avuncular and somehow menacing Alan Shartok joins us again. Hello, Alan. Welcome to the show.
Well, I was feeling pretty good, but then somebody came in the room here and attacked me.
Rosemary?
Yeah.
And let's welcome our great shining star, Rosemary Armeo, the superstar of this program and director.
Oh, there's a setup if I ever heard
journalism.
One.
Well, we'll just sit and bask in the glow of your greatness.
We actually do have listeners writing in saying, can you give us some hopeful good news? We can't stand the dreariness.
Boy, I agree. I've been listening to this show for months now, and it's a real downer. No, I listen at my desk every day.
He listens.
I listen every day.
On the one side of the desk, he has us, and on the other side of the desk, he has the thing where the ambulances call in.
The scanner, yes. Now, I'd like to welcome communications consultant, kind of the newbie on the panel, Teresa Bourgeois. You've been here about 6 months now on the panel?
A couple months, yep.
Yeah, and you know the microphone goes toward the mouth, right? That's
really?
That's it. Yep.
Okay, we'll do it that way then.
So how are you enjoying the panel? I don't think I've done the show with you yet.
No, this is our first time. It's always interesting.
Well, it'll go quickly. You'll get over it very quickly.
She's so bright.
It's nice to have you all here today.
It's nice to be had.
Yeah. And the email address, once again, is panel@wamc.org. So we'll do a little turnaround today. We won't start the show with the president-elect. We'll get to him.
I'm sure we'll talk.
Yeah, exactly. We'll talk about the Democrats today. Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi faces a challenge to her job as frustrated House Democrats meet to select a new slate of leaders. Pelosi likely to be reelected today. I think they're meeting. I think they're underway now. There's some disenchantment, obviously, among the Democratic caucus that she has led since 2002. Tim Ryan, Ohio congressman, is challenging her for the job, arguing that newer lawmakers need a bigger voice in a caucus that has been led for years by the same aging slate of leaders and committee chairmen. Nancy Pelosi, they've gained some seats in the House, right?
Yeah,
but it's not a majority.
They didn't do nearly as well as they thought they would do.
So it looks like it may be a slam dunk that she wins panel.
Well, let me first say, first of all, I have a feeling that they are measuring the desk. The movers are already at his office, Tim Ryan's office, and they're going to move him down to the basement soon. Do you guys remember a man named Mike Bragman? Michael
sure.
Bragman was decided he could take on Shelley Silver. Was it Shelley Silver? I think so. For a speaker. Shelley Silver, of course, not taking prisoners. Well, that's a bad word right now. So what happened is they moved him down to the basement. Bragman took him on, ran against him, lost, moved him down to the basement, never to be seen again.
I am in favor of replacing Nancy Pelosi, who I'm a big admirer of, as is Tim Ryan. She is his mentor. He has done very well under her. She has given him great assignments. But just the record of defeat and her age, and it is time for a change. However, my problem is, having been open to the idea of Tim Ryan, I've listened to him. He's not really impressive. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is a star. She's such a shark. She knows exactly what she's doing. Although she's not had much success, it isn't totally her fault. I would be very leery about turning over the Democratic part of the Congress to Tim Ryan. He just doesn't have it yet.
Well, I think Nancy Pelosi has an incredible track record of holding her caucus together.
Yes.
It's a raucous caucus, and she holds it together. And now more than ever, it's imperative to have somebody on the Democratic side who understands strategy and understands how to count votes and understands how to win. I think this Tim Ryan run is really, he wants to be governor of Ohio.
Right.
And I think this was just an effort to get some exposure on his part. You know, he is so not tactically savvy that it was reported that he didn't even have the phone numbers of the Democratic members of the Congress to know who to call. So if you want a vote count, you have to know know who your members are and how to reach them. But I think that her skills right now are going to be essential in terms of trying to hold back the onslaught that it's about to happen. And there will be some changes. The number two slot is going to be one of two women. Both options are from California.
You mean Steny Hoyer is out?
No, not Steny Hoyer. I'm sorry. The Linda Sanchez and Barbara Lee. I'm sorry for the third leadership position, the vice chair,
chair,
because Becerra is out because his time has passed. But he'll probably become the. This is a little wonky, but chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee.
Senator Levin is.
Senator Levin's leaving.
Yeah.
He's not leaving the Congress, but he said he would step down, and so there'll be a fight between Richie Neal and Becerra. Becerra probably wins that fight.
That's too bad because I love Richie Neal.
Yeah.
But of course, how important is the fact that you need another woman in the leadership team?
It's critical.
It's critical even though Pelosi is the head person?
To have more women in leadership, yes, right now, more diversity in leadership.
Yeah.
A woman of color.
I don't think it's entirely because he wants to be governor of Ohio.
No.
Although that certainly definitely played into it. He represents that area of the country that Clinton lost and ought not to have lost in the Rust Belt. He comes from a part of Ohio that has not voted Republican as it did for Trump this year in decades.
Right.
And so I thought that his, and I still think that his run for to challenge her was important. I just don't think he's up to the job.
Was he the right person? But sorry.
Sorry. I just wanted to say one thing, and that is that as the Statler brothers once sang, when the team loses, the manager gets fired. And the team has been losing on a regular basis now.
I hate these sports analogies.
It's also a music analogy.
But Alan,
were you letting me, Rosemary, finish my sentence?
For Pete's sake.
Or not?
All right, children, cut it out. We'll take a break here because I think YouTube need to cool down. And you know what? It seemed like it was going very nicely. You look angelic over there, Rosemary.
I know. He just attacked me for nothing, and you let him.
I got a couple of letters yesterday saying, why don't you let Rosemary finish her sentence?
And this I'll is a finish perfect your sentence.
What'd you say?
I'll finish your sentence. We need to understand why the team lost.
Thanks.
And the House team did win some seats, but there are bigger issues why the team lost.
All right, I'll finish the sentence. We'll take a break. It's the roundtable, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe today. 22 minutes after 9 o'clock, it's the Roundtable panel. Teresa Bourgeois, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok here. And we're talking about the leadership vote in the House today among Democrats. Nancy Pelosi expected to win. And the challenger, Tim Ryan, Rosemary had mentioned, was something of a protege of Nancy Pelosi. And I asked if this was symbolic. Is this a symbolic run?
Not symbolic. I think that she's vulnerable right now, and this run shows it. And she should not have gone unchallenged. I mean, if there were a stronger person, a more skilled person at vote counting, at controlling, as Teresa said, the caucus, she might be in real trouble. This guy just doesn't have it. You don't have to listen to him very long to see that. But still, for a young man in an area of the country that the Democrats usually do well in and did not, for him to stand up and say, we got to do better, that's really important.
I say fire the manager.
As the Statler brothers once said.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They didn't exactly say that. They said something else.
I suspect that's
Well, I think the
case.
Manager that needed to be where you needed a change is at the DNC. And that's where you're going to get
and
a change.
Keith Ellison.
That's going to be a much tougher fight, and I don't know who wins that
did
fight.
Did you hear the NPR piece this morning on Morning Edition?
Indeed.
So set it up for us. What happened?
Okay. Well, Congressman Keith Ellison is a candidate to be chairman. Interestingly, he was the first Muslim American elected to Congress, I think about 10 years ago. And I believe he was a Bernie Sanders supporter.
Bernie Sanders is supporting him for the DNC.
And so is, I believe, Senator Chuck Schumer.
I don't know that he's announced his support yet for someone. Have you read that? I'm not sure on that one.
The AP says he has attracted support from high-profile backers, including Harry Reid and his replacement, Senator Chuck Schumer.
Okay. There you go. I didn't know he had stated a preference yet.
I was very interested in what you said before about Richie Neal. And Richie Neal has always been the heir presumptive for the Ways and Means Committee, and he might have been the head guy. Of course, he's my congressman, and I happen to love him. So it was interesting to me the idea that you thought that he would not get the spot.
I think it's an open question. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him too. I think Richie Neal's a tremendous member of Congress, and I think it's a close call. But I think Becerra may win that one, just from what I read. I don't know for sure, but that's what I read, and certainly he would be Pelosi's pick. I believe.
Okay, what does that have to do though with the DNC? Let's
go back to the DNC.
Who's Ellison's competition? Howard Dean has announced he wanted to.
There are a number of folks who've put their hat in the ring, and there are people who are urging Joe Biden to run. And
if the party wants to get younger, that's not the way to go.
Right.
But if they want somebody who's beloved, that is the way to go.
Right.
And he is right now.
The real issue in the House is redistricting. And the Republicans really cleaned the Democrats' clock in 2010 in redistricting. And
that's right.
And so really what the Democrats need to do is look to 2020.
Well, you have a federal court, Teresa, now, who is saying gerrymandering is illegal and unconstitutional. And if that turns out to be upheld one way or the other, because they say that the court seems to be leaning that way. If that's the case, and they can do it before Trump puts some new people on the court, that could change. I mean, Texas comes in and they wipe out their entire Democratic, thing by just wiping them out and just drawing different kinds of lines.
Exactly.
It's disgraceful.
I don't think they can do it again before the new guy comes on.
Why not?
Because the court doesn't meet again, and January 20th, he's in office, and that'll be one of his first orders of business is to get an appointee onto the court.
Which there's been a deafening silence about the court, by the way.
That's
a separate topic, but I'm fascinated by the deafening silence on what's going to happen with the court. But that's a different topic.
Well, I think it depends on what the Democrats are going to do about the court. I mean, here's this terrible thing that actually has just happened. The president has a constitutional, mandate to appoint. He did. And the Republicans said, we're not going to let anybody that you appoint onto the court. And if Hillary wins, we're not going to let anybody on the court there. Now, you have 60 votes that you need. The Democrats have what they need to put a stop to it. The question is, will the Democrats do unto them as they had done unto themselves?
We've not heard any indication of it. In fact, just the opposite. The Democrats have always maintained, do your constitutional job. So
well,
it's just such a stunning breach of responsibility. I don't know that, and they've been so forceful in saying that it's not the right thing to do.
It would be hard for them now to say, okay, well, we're going to do what you did, that would just be, I can't see it.
Right. I can see it, and I think they ought to.
Under Chuck Schumer, you see that?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Chuck is a hell of a fighter. And I think the rationale in this case is, wait a second now, the court would be a Democratic court right now. You can call it whatever you want to call it. We don't like this, and we think that you've deprived the American people of you've stepped outside the Constitution, and therefore we're not going to allow it to happen. There's plenty of rationales for it.
Alan, we have about 2.5 minutes before our news break. Why don't we take care of a couple of letters? Rosemary complained in the break that this is just too wonky, and she's probably right. So we'll get our Trump fix, and then Rosemary will be happy. It'll be after the news. We have plenty to talk about there.
Well, we political scientists don't particularly think that this is wonky.
Okay, well, people want to hear more about the leadership of the Ways and Means Committee. I'm sure they'll write in and tell us.
Zing.
Wonky, but if you care about health care, that's where it all happens.
Let's see
what the listeners are having to say here in the last 2 minutes before
okay.
the news.
Okay. Danny, and I'm not making this up, but Danny wrote a very, very good letter.
Uh-oh.
He said,
Alan is right.
Thank you to all the members of the panel, but especially Alan, for helping me. But he spelled Alan wrong. He spelled it the English sort of elite way. For helping me to have the tiniest bit of insight into the complexities of the political situation in this great nation. Without you guys, I would be totally in the dark.
Oh,
isn't that
boy.
Nice?
That's very nice.
Talking
about
us.
Being
oh,
lit
gosh.
By a refrigerator
thank,
bulb.
Thank, you. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Hi, panel.
Hi.
This is Ben from Springfield. I have a question. Remember All in the Family? How do you think Archie Bunker would have explained this election to George Jefferson? Well, I got to tell you, I'm not good at that, but Ray Graff is one of the greatest imitators
I
have ever known in my whole life.
And besides, I don't know what he would say. And I saw that letter about 2 days ago.
The same letter?
Yeah, same question.
It just came in now?
See, it gets to my point about repeating the questions.
You know that guy who stood up on the airplane, the Trump supporter, and
he's banned
yelled,
permanently?
He banned permanently now. I think that's what Archie Bunker would have said to George Jefferson.
Maybe,
he did an imitation there for us.
Dear panel.
Hello.
Nancy Pelosi absolutely needs to go. She is truly out of touch with working class folks. She may be loved by her caucus, but she is not, in capital letters, not, loved by the Democratic voters I know. We need new blood, please. And that's from George.
Alan, you said exactly that before the show started.
I did.
Exactly that.
Well, the other thing that she's doing is adding six regional representatives with the DCCC, that's the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. And so there are different efforts to try to bring in new younger voices.
Yeah, well, she's scared.
She's listening.
Tim Ryan is the superior person to lead the House Democrats, says Bill. It says here, to staunch the disenfranchisement of old line union, you got
to
go.
We have to take a break here, but the wonkiness now is ended. So turn your radios back on. It's Trump time after the news. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe. It is the Roundtable panel. Our email address here is panel@wamc.org if you want to weigh in. And our panel today, Teresa Bourgeois. And
hello,
Rosemary
hello.
Armeo and Alan Shartok. So welcome all. We got through the wonky portion. President-elect Donald Trump tapping conservatives with deep ties to Washington and Wall Street to fill out key cabinet roles as he continues to deliberate over his Secretary of State. Trump is moving forward with nominations, including former Goldman Sachs executive Steven Mnuchin as Secretary of the Treasury. Trump also chose billionaire investor Wilbur Ross as his Commerce Secretary. Both men have confirmed they've been nominated. Yesterday, Donald Trump chose Georgia Congressman Tom Price to oversee the nation's health care system, picking a fierce Obamacare critic who has championed efforts to privatize Medicare. He also selected another veteran Republican, Elaine Chao, a former labor secretary, to lead the Department of Transportation. Now, interestingly, this morning, Trump said he's leaving his, quote, great business so he can focus on being the nation's 45th president. He tweeted early today that legal documents are being crafted to take me, quote, take me out completely of the business operations, adding the presidency is a far more important task. Trump had been under some criticism, including on this program, for exposing himself to potential conflicts if he kept a role in his global business while being president. He says he'll hold a news conference with his kids on the subject on December 15th. So much to talk about. Let's start with his appointments. Who wants to go first?
Okay, I'll go first. Chao in transportation, one of her biggest, she has several assets. One is she's Asian American, so he has more diversity on his team. She is experienced, and she's the wife of Mitch McConnell. Isn't that convenient?
Who says he will not recuse himself from confirmation hearings.
Correct. Because, you know, who better to judge? So, and he, this is also the guy who will decide about conflict of interest in Trump's business. But at any rate, Chao's has experience as a labor secretary under Bush. She was known for doing away with lots of regulations. Mine inspections, nah, we don't need those. Get rid of it. So I think it bespeaks another one of his policy objectives, which is to do away with lots of government regulation. Price is a disaster, I think, in health and human services. He is not just opposed to Obamacare and has an actual replacement plan. So he's not going to sit around and just talk. He's ready to move on a replacement. But he also has talked about moving into alignment with Paul Ryan on undoing Medicaid, Medicare, and ultimately Social Security, turning them into basically coupon systems.
Mm. I think what you say is correct. I want to go back to Trump eliminating himself legally from his corporation, but he's going to have a press conference with his kids. What if the kids are going to run the company? What? You mean he's not going to talk to them? I mean,
well,
that's...
we skip from appointments to
back to that.
Okay, go back. We got to do this one at a time, or I'm going to just get confused. So,
well, I don't want that to happen.
No.
So back to appointments, and then we'll...
Okay, so let's go. Thank you, Rosemary. I appreciate that. May I have another?
we have time.
So I think it's interesting that Elaine Chao turns out to be a moderate. I know what you're saying about what she's done, but perceived as a moderate pick in the cabinet.
In the Trump cabinet.
Trump cabinet.
Right.
As well as if he appoints Mitt As a guy, he's going to be seen as a moderate also. And I think his genius is he takes that conservative guy. What's his name?
Price.
No, the conservative guy, his chief advisor. No,
Bannon.
Bannon. Thank you for that. He takes Bannon and he puts Bannon in an office there. He says, okay, you're my senior advisor. Sit there. But he's not in charge of a department, you will notice.
Because he could not get confirmed.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. But I don't.
Oh, for many
but
reasons.
I think Trump is, you know, I know this is a terrible thing to say. He's cunning. And he knows what will fly and what won't. And so, therefore, now the idea of putting a Goldman guy in
is
just incredible
because
he ran against Goldman. That was his whole premise, that Goldman was that Hillary had taken the money from
Wall
Goldman.
Street. I'm so glad we got rid of that Wall Street influence in the White House. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I think if you look at the broad range of these appointments, I mean, if you're a coal miner, if you're a teacher, if you're a healthcare worker, if you're a factory worker, if you're most of the people who went to Donald Trump's rallies, these picks are not.
They're not for you.
They're not for you. They're not on your side. But if you're the one percenters, if you're the people who can afford the $5,000 dinner that they're going to have next week with Trump to raise money.
Candlelight dinner. Yes.
Candlelight dinner.
Donors to the inauguration.
These folks are on your side. But I think if you just do a quick check. You have an education secretary pick who, essentially anti-public school. She's pro-charter schools. You know, she's worked hard against them. You have an AG in Sessions who, anti-Voting Rights Act. You know, you have the HHS pick, privatizing. I mean, Tom Price's proposal for health care is so extreme that even, when Paul Ryan is asked, do you have a plan to replace Obamacare, mm-hmm. he says no when there is one.
Price.
But it's too extreme for him.
Right.
When Price is too extreme for Paul Ryan, then you've got some serious questions.
But when you're out of office, when you can't get your bill passed, that's when you're all for these things.
Right.
But if you're at all responsible, you can't do it. So all of a sudden he's got the Congress, the Senate, the President on one side, and Ryan is nowhere to be found when it comes to X-ing out, a lot of these programs.
Right. I mean, the whole healthcare question, we could do a whole show on that of this Price pick.
And by the way, I'm sorry for interrupting.
Oh,
do you want to finish?
No, go ahead.
What? You're laughing? What?
Because that was so nice.
Go, go, go.
It's so unlike you. It's only me.
He's nice to everybody but you.
Yeah.
When Teresa speaks, this is in no way a comparison, but when Teresa speaks, she speaks for the middle class. Otherwise, why would her name be Bourgeois? Okay, so don't you see?
Yeah.
Okay, but if you've met a doctor anywhere, and I've had several conversations with them, with surgeons and other people, I got to tell you, they all hate everything that's going on in healthcare in America. They all think they've been screwed and that it's terrible. And how can my mother said when I went to medical school, I was going to be taken care of for life. And now they're not. And they're very, very angry about that. So he's pretty representative, I believe, of that class.
Well, he certainly represents. And if you look where he got his money, I mean, he's from. Holds a seat in Georgia outside of Atlanta, wealthy district, was essentially, he was not uncontested, but he had a very safe seat. Yet he raised an enormous amount of money. And where did that money come from? It came from the pharmaceuticals. It came from the doctors. It came from the insurance companies. And also, I was reading, in any case, and what I also didn't know, but I learned that Trump holds a lot of big pharma stock, pharmaceutical stock.
Yeah.
So I think that he will be a strong voice for the insurance companies. He will be a strong voice for big pharma. But he will not be a strong voice for the coal miners. He will not be a strong voice for the average working person. What will be interesting is that what Trump said that he was for, of course, it depends on what day you ask, is completely different than what Price says he's for regarding health care. But you have had in a number of places, what's going to happen? Under his proposal, 20 million people lose their health care. Is the Congress really going to pass a proposal? Well, 20 million people lose their health care.
Let's also not forget that we have not quite seen, although a lot has been written about the way Trump rules. So he has put a lot of real hardliners in his cabinet so far. So they don't make policy. They advise him. So is he sitting out there to listen to the most extreme, and he comes up with something that's more palatable, that kind of plays to everyone else? There is that possibility. I don't believe in giving him the benefit of the doubt, but you do have to consider that.
Because he's not a policy person, though. Trump is not a policy person. He doesn't understand policy. He doesn't know the facts. These picks become all the more important.
And one other thing, can I run this by you? Because I want to hear your opinion on this, is Pence.
Pence is running this show.
Don't you see his fingerprints all over the people he's picking?
Look at the number, the other pick for HHS, and I'm sorry, I can't remember her name. She comes out of Indiana. Sharma, I don't remember her name, but the other major pick that they announced
yesterday.
Health and Human Services, the health care to oversee.
Medicare.
So she comes out of Indiana.
Right. His person.
I said yesterday, Pence, you may remember, Rosemary, I said yesterday, and I'd like a little credit for it, that that there was a tremendous reliance by Trump on Pence. Has to be because he is a sort of transmission belt to the Republican Party, and he's at every one of those meetings. When the guys show up, he's there. I'm fascinated, however, by Romney, because Romney takes a little good bit of guts. Now, he had that dinner.
Do you think guts that was last night? I want to hear this.
Why did they have a public dinner if he was serious about this?
No, they might have had it because the word is out there that this is all to slap him down. You know, I think Rosemary said it yesterday. That was what it was about. On the other hand, it may have been a way of showing the American people that while he may not pick him, I don't know what he's going to do, but that while he may not pick him, he still has respect for him.
I think it's all about groveling. Trump likes to win. And last night he had Mitt Romney, his fiercest Republican critic, in front of the camera saying, we had an interesting conversation. I really like what he's doing. He's a great guy. Just completely reneging on
Gorilla
all the
dust.
Things he said.
Romney did not have to go. Romney did not have to go to that dinner.
Correct.
Oh, no, I don't agree with that. I mean, in 4 years, I don't know how old Romney is going to be. I know how old I'm going to be, but 4 years is a long time.
You're going to be 4 years older than you are now.
I'm going to be older.
Oh, listen, by the way, Rob, the engineer, is giving me the signal. I think that's the signal. We have to take a short break.
Which finger is it?
Well, I'm number one, I'll tell you that. Okay. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It is a Wednesday morning. 9:47 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe, Teresa Bourgeois, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok on our panel today. And you at home via panel@wamc.org, where we get some letters. Anything good today?
I don't know. Panel.
That's us.
Trump now, in capital letters now, I like when you do that, decides to, quote, voluntarily separate from his businesses. Meanwhile, he had closed-door meetings with heads of state and his children for the past few weeks. The deals are already done. His kids will be proxy, just like when Putin didn't run Russia. Cute, huh? Personally,
depressing.
I'd like more wonky information. Don't treat us as lowbrow, information-phobic people, Rosemary.
Whoa.
This is why we like WAMC. It gives us more information than traditional media. And by the way, you were wrong about Hillary being more likely to win over Trump than Sanders. It would be lovely to hear an apology. Wait a second.
How do you know?
In defense of Rosemary. Exactly. How do we know that Bernie would have done better? We don't know that.
He would.
And I voted for Bernie.
Trump bested.
He could have not handled the onslaught at all.
16 other Republicans and 5 Democrats came up against that branding character assassination thing. Bernie had lots of things to use against him. It would have been the same.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
We'll never know.
No, we won't know. That's the point. Doug said, Democratic senators, in capital letters now, must fight any nomination Donald Trump makes to the Supreme Court. The very idea of checks and balances has been delegitimized by McConnell's refusal to hold hearings on Merrick. The Republicans called Obama a tyrant, but the real tyranny is thwarting the Senate's constitutional duty to hold hearings, and that's from Doug.
By the way, did you see?
The Constitution is really under assault.
Did you see what Schumer said about Price?
No.
He came out swinging and said it's akin to the fox guarding the hen house.
Yeah. Very original.
Well,
it's a good sign.
He said it well.
Yeah.
A slight Long Island accent.
Panel.
I love the roundtable, the banter that comes along with it while representing a diverse range of opinions. My question is, do you think that the actions that the president-elect is taking lately, whereby he seems to be changing his stance on many of the election platform topics, do you see this as negatively affecting the opinion of him and by his base, or do you think that his base will simply roll over and support anything that he does? That's a great question.
But he hasn't taken office. He hasn't ruled. He hasn't done anything. I mean, somebody said he's ruling, but he's not. He's in transition.
I think this is a real serious issue, frankly. I've been thinking about this a lot because you have a president-elect who, you can say it however you want, he doesn't tell the truth, he's not consistent, he's on all sides of an issue. However you describe it, he's a liar, whatever words you want to use, he is all over the map. And he has no experience governing. And one of the things that matters in the Congress and it matters in international negotiations is a person's word. And we have a president-elect who his word is not, people can't trust his word because he changes his views all the time. And so how is that going to work when he's negotiating with the Congress? How is that going to work when they're negotiating with other countries, when there's no consistency and when he has a very clear track record of not telling the truth?
Well, please.
Take a number.
I think he's more sophisticated than that. I think that he can be consistent. And when he's talking with people at his level, when he's doing his dealing, he is capable of getting what he wants, but he also knows how to use the media. He is a master. He is controlling the media right now. And so he uses it. Those tweets are like throwing little, what did you call it, Ray? Throwing red meat to his base. So he'll come out and say, you know, if you burn the flag, you should lose your citizenship, which is ridiculous. Even Scalia said that was crazy. But it starts, you know, his base is all happy with that at the same time that he's making really constitution-busting decisions about his businesses, for example. Right. I think he's doing both.
But that's what Ross Perot used the phrase gorilla dust, you know, and he's thrown a lot of gorilla dust. and that's my new favorite
great.
Word right now.
That's
gorilla
great.
Dust is,
that
a,
is great.
And it's brought back from the 90s. We used to talk about that a lot of the time. But, and that is, you know, gorillas, when they're being attacked,
yeah,
they pick dirt and they'll throw it in there. And he's thrown a lot of gorilla dust to distract from things like, you know, picking a vulture capitalist to run the Commerce Department, or picking a person who says that they are going to end Medicare to run the Health and Human Services. These things are all a distraction, just like, and I know we're going to talk about Carrier. Carrier is a distraction.
Right.
You know, it happened, the announcement came last night for a reason, because it came at the same time where he was announcing his Treasury pick and his Commerce mm-hmm. pick, who are not for working people.
Mm-hmm. Alan, you wanted to say something.
So that would, of course, That, of course, would give him a lot of credit. And I agree
give
with
that. Give Pence a lot of credit. This is where Pence and Priebus come in, and Bannon.
Well, but he's got to listen to them, and he does. And I think he is manipulative. But I'm still looking at the 40% during the election, who, no matter what he said, no matter what, grabbing a woman's genital, doing this, doing that, that 40% did not move one iota. Now, I don't know whether that's going to happen this time as he does things that disappoint his followers. I mean, what happens if he doesn't give them the coal that they want because he can't? Or what happens if he turns out not to be quite the disbeliever in climate change that he said he was before? So I'm looking at that 40%. I want to see what the polls say.
Aren't these questions for after year one of his actual presidency?
No.
My question for the panel, you learned experts, is this. Have you ever seen a president's transition team this early, 3 weeks after an election, this scrutinized?
Yes.
Every one of them?
You are seeing in his transition the way he will govern, the way he interviews people, the way he presents them to the public, what team he's putting together. Absolutely.
So when President Obama started,
absolutely,
there was an endless roundtable every day about his transition team.
There wasn't a roundtable then,
wasn't.
Ray.
One of the differences is that you have a president-elect who has no governing experience. You have a president-elect who has not been consistent on where he says he stands on the issues. And so these picks all send signals about what his actions actually will be. Hmm. And there was always a disconnect. If you read his proposals, if you read the contract on America, and you understood what the implications were, those are they are for working families, they were not consistent with what he was saying to that 40% that Alan's talking about. And that's the one thing where I think the Democrats really failed to help the public understand that Trump's policies and Bannon's policies and the people he was surrounding himself with are not on the side of the working people that came to his rallies. And when they find out through his policies that, you know, there's going to be tremendous disappointment and disenchantment.
He's scheduled a couple of rallies, by the way, in Ohio.
Thursday, yeah. He's going to go back to Cincinnati, and then he's going on to Indianapolis. This
yes.
carrier thing is,
so
know,
I think
gorilla
he
dust.
Is.
Okay,
carrier,
so the carrier thing,
dust.
And we might as well talk about it. The air conditioning
gorilla
company
dust.
Carrier is acknowledging that it has reached a deal with President-elect Donald Trump to keep nearly 1,000 jobs in Indiana. Trump and Vice President-elect Mike Pence, the outgoing Indiana governor, plan to be in the state on Thursday, tomorrow, to unveil the agreement alongside company officials. If you recall from the campaign, Donald Trump spent a lot of time talking about Carrier specifically moving jobs out of the country. So,
well, first of all, he's saving half the jobs. Second of all, as Teresa points out, a lot's going to Indiana because this is where it happens. Isn't Carrier in Syracuse also? I thought they were.
Well, if the Carrier
but this
gone.
Is Carrier isn't. But this is the the plant that they said they were going to move the jobs
to Mexico.
Is an Indiana plant. So
Indianapolis.
So he saves half. The question that we're all asking is:
Pence did this, not.
What are we going to pay for this staying here?
And also, may I point out that the numbers are slippery. It says half of the jobs or 1,000 jobs will stay in Indianapolis. They had previously announced, Carrier did, that they were going to keep 400 jobs in Indianapolis. So are these 1,000 in addition, or are they the same ones? Count it twice. And let us not forget that Trump also took credit for keeping a plant in Kentucky that was never going to leave. So I'm really suspicious of the numbers. What did we pay to get it? And why did Pence not negotiate this previously? Most of the givebacks, the inducements, are coming from Indiana, not from the federal government.
But isn't that part of the deal, though? Governments and state governments and federal governments, I mean, isn't that what Trump's talking about? Getting companies to come back by making the deal
sweeter
for them.
Correct. So why didn't the Indiana governor, that would be Mike Pence, talk to the federal government about this before that? In other words, is this all like staged? It's delayed because, we didn't talk to Obama about it. Obama could have made the same threats about to them saying, hey, you want to do business with us, you better talk to us about staying
there.
Yeah, but did he? Did Pence ask him to? Did they work together?
Oh, it's Pence's fault that the president didn't do that.
No, not his fault. I think it's that Pence deliberately held back, and this is kind of stagey. And I feel bad saying it because if Trump did this, and it's clear and legit as they would like us to believe, then he deserves congratulations and thanks. But I there's just been too much about Trump that I can't take it at his word.
You're raising your hand, Alan.
Yes, I try to do that.
You all
remember when JFK, well, maybe you don't because you're old.
I wasn't
so
born
young.
Yet. Yeah.
But when JFK stood up to the steel barons. And said, no, you're not going to do that. And when he did it, there was the clear implication, if you ever want a piece of government business again, you know, for the rest of your lives. And they succumbed. They moved back on that. So I don't know what the deal is. If I knew what the deal was, I could speak about this intelligently.
Yeah, we don't know the terms of the deal. But I think there's no, it's not happenstance that was announced last night at the same time he was announcing Wilbur Ross, who is a, you know, vulture capitalist is what his, how he's
Did you
made
say
his
vulture
money.
Capitalist?
How he's made his money.
Yes,
yeah,
that's true.
He's
but
a vulture capitalist.
But his real, well, his fame in New York is, of course, that he was married to Betsy McCoy Ross, the lieutenant governor who stood up at the Pataki Endless Speech. And didn't sit down. That made her very famous.
Now, we have another piece of news that came through this morning that qualifies, I think, as both wonky and the Trump fix that everybody requires. And that's key members of the Trump economic team are promising major changes to Dodd-Frank. We don't have time to bring that up yet, but I'll brief you on that crossed the wire. Alan, we have about 20 seconds if you want to get a letter in, and then
we'll
break for news.
Very important from Diane. My husband is a urologist.
Oh, good.
Who strongly supports Obamacare. He sees that people are getting the care they need. Before Obamacare, many people couldn't get the care they need because they couldn't afford it. Now, when he tells them what they need, they are able to move forward.
All right. And 15 seconds.
Okay. Thanks for recognizing and talking about Svengali Pence's role in creating the new government in his image, and that's from Naomi.
All right.
And Joni says, okay, Romney is 7 months older than Hillary, 9 months younger than Trump, born March 12th, 1947. So if you're leading to a future presidential run, I hope not. No more presidents older than me, please.
Okay.
He's trying to stabilize the government, I think. He's just trying to stabilize the government.
Well, let's leave it there. We'll take a short break. It's the roundtable. You can join the conversation by emailing us panel@wamc.org, and we'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Wednesday, 10:06. Ray Graff in for Joe today. It's the Roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo is here, Alan Chartok, and Teresa Bourgeois. And the email is panel@wamc.org. And Alan, I understand we have a few letters.
We do. Thank you, Ray.
You're welcome, Alan. Over to you.
As a lifelong Democrat, until this election, I can tell you why they lost. They forgot about the white middle class. All they focus on is illegals, LGBTQ, minorities, etc. If they don't figure this out quick, they better be prepared to lose more seats. Kennedy put a man on the moon. Obama put a man in the women's room. I met Teresa when I worked at RPI, says Holly. And I have to say, listening to her on the panel this morning has been lovely. She's a great addition. Thanks for adding the voice of another smart, sassy lady to the roundtable.
Oh, thank you. Nice?
Well done. Yeah,
very nice. Thank you.
Elizabeth says, to whom he deflect the blame? To whom will he deflect the blame for not fulfilling his promises to his followers?
That's
He'll figure
question.
Out a way.
He'll figure out a way.
Yeah. And Brucey says, Trump is very media noisy and is purposely driving the media frenzy. It may look like a new level of scrutiny, but he and Bannon and Kellyanne Conway is driving this intentionally. I think he creates chaos for a lot of reasons, but one of those reasons is he thrives in chaos, and he knows it's profoundly disorienting to media and the public and the Democrats, too, and that's from Brucey. Okay. And Willard
agree.
Says, what?
I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Good
gorilla
yeah.
dust.
Willard said, how can they use our money? We paid half. Our employers paid the other half. Oh, this is about Social Security. How can they use our money? We paid half. Our employer paid the other half. This money went into a fund for us to use at retirement. How can our government use this money for any other purpose? It is not an entitlement like Medicare, Medicaid, SSI, EBT. Can any administration misuse our Social Security? You bet they can.
Yes, they can. And that's why,
years.
You know, Chuck Schumer will be very important, Senator Schumer, in this effort to hold back any changes. You know, they've tried to do this before and privatizing other things.
But they had a Democratic president.
Right. So this is these are very tenuous times right now with Medicare and Social Security.
Well, George W. Bush tried it, too. It wasn't just Democratic presidents.
And we know where it's going to go. They want to put they put Goldman Goldman Sachs on the
Treasury
on
Secretary,
the,
right.
As Secretary. Now they're going to say to us, okay, you can have Social Security, but it has to be invested with one of our favorite companies.
Right.
That's what they're going to do.
And that's why, you know, I'll go back to defend my wonkiness, why it matters who is the ranking Democrat on the House Ways
Absolutely.
And Means Committee, because that's where this legislation will go through. And so details matter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Kathy says, my question is this. Where, if anywhere, do the obligations and duties of Congressional Oversight Committee come into play on Trump's choices for the various cabinet positions? Does it include reviewing his picks to weed out personal financial gain and conflict of interest? Well, first of all, you know, you have a majority of Republicans on these committees. But in addition to that, these guys, the Democrats, will come up with their own questions. They get to ask questions, too. And if it's embarrassing enough, I think that might disqualify some people. Look, you got McCain and a whole bunch of others who are not friendly to Trump.
Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, sure.
A couple of us. So the answer to the question is that a number of these cabinet positions, all of the cabinet positions and a number of the others, require Senate confirmation. And so that's the process that the reader is asking about, is Senate confirmation. But the Republicans control the Senate. The question is, can the Democrats raise enough serious questions? And I think one of the reasons why some of the more obvious Trump picks are not being advanced, Newt Gingrich, for instance, is because I think that they've made it clear that he can't get Senate confirmation. And I think the holdup with the Secretary of State is, while there's a big push for Giuliani to be Secretary of State, I think that there is a real question of whether or not he could get Senate confirmation as well, which hence Romney and Petraeus discussion.
Is this insight, Teresa, on your part, this is just what you think, or is there any hard evidence that the Senate Republicans have said these are people you can't bring up?
Well, if you just listen to what Rand Paul says, for instance, Lindsey Graham, John McCain, others are signaling.
Right. Interesting.
And why else wouldn't Giuliani just get whatever job he wanted?
Because Trump thinks Giuliani is too much of a firecracker, can't win. I don't think we can discount Trump or suggest that his motives are that he wants a guy who will give him trouble when he's in the cabinet. That's what I think.
I don't know. I think that Trump has had no problem with firebrands, or Steve Bannon wouldn't be sitting where he's sitting. There's also Corey Lewandowski. I think he fully thought that he could get Rudy in, and that it developed later that there would be problems. I like your theory, Teresa, talk about that in a Senate hearing, Rudy Giuliani's overseas dealings would come to light, and that would indirectly throw a light on Trump's multiple involvements, far more than Giuliani. So it would make him look bad.
Right.
And just like Corey, he supported, Trump supported Corey until it made him look bad, and then he dumped him for a while.
And now?
And then he brought him back, and I think that we'll see Giuliani in some role
Homeland
in the administration,
Security?
But it isn't going to be one that requires a public hearing about his
White House jobs don't require Senate confirmation for the most part, and so.
Lisa says, I believe Trump supporters will stay loyal. They have no understanding of government nor any interest in learning. Trump won by demonizing others, and he will continue to do so by tweeting, satisfying his supporters. And that's Lisa from Montgomery.
I think when they start losing their health care coverage— that they will remain less loyal. I think when they find out, Trump talks about child care coverage, but his is a tax credit, which it goes to the wealthiest people, doesn't benefit the working class or the lower income people as much. I think when the realities of a lot of his proposals come to be, then he is picking their pocketbooks. I think that's when they will lose support and become disenchanted.
Now, Henry writes a very important letter. He does.
Alan's right.
Carrier is owned by United Technologies, a major government defense contractor. Had to be arm-twisting here. I'm sure that's right.
And I approve of that. The federal government should be using its clout to get what it wants.
And that is exactly why I quoted the JFK example with the steel
people
in the day. And the last letter I have before me is from Zach. There's also talk of Labor Secretary Tom Perez running for DNC chair. He would likely have the support of Barack Obama if he were to run.
Key members of Donald Trump's economic team are promising major changes to the 2010 Dodd-Frank law Congress passed to prevent another financial crisis. Critics say the law went too far to hinder banks from making loans that people and businesses need to spend at higher. The president-elect's pick for Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says laws are the, quote, engine of growth for small and medium-sized businesses, and that the fallout from Dodd-Frank has been a cutting back on lending. Trump's choice for Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross blames the law for putting banks in a position where he says, quote, they now have more compliance people than they have lending officers.
I've mentioned this before, but interestingly, I heard Barney Frank on our station, in which he was saying, yes, we did go too far in some areas. We have to change some of that. So I don't really understand what that's all about. Nevertheless, we do know that we are cruising for a bruising when it comes to another bubble of some kind if we don't take lessons from what happened the last time.
I just don't know what the lessons are. I need to read more about what this means, what it is they're talking about. They want to make lending easier. So what is that going to mean for the rate of inflation, what the monetary policy should be, what the Janet Yellen will be doing?
Well, she's already signaled that another go up. Interest rate may increase
in December.
Before the end of the year, yeah.
I want to live forever.
You want to live forever? Mm-hmm. Oh, did you see that article?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. All right, so we might as well talk about this. So there was this article. It was in the Daily News, I think, today, but it was in the Daily Mail in the UK yesterday. Are you going to die in the next 5 years? Simple blood test can help scientists to predict your chances of survival. A blood marker can detect the building blocks of cancer and heart disease. And they discovered a marker, and they say it's far more accurate in assessing the risk of death than other previous methods. And this, you found this interesting, Alan.
Well, I did. I'm 75, and, you know, I'd like to know whether I'm going to live another 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years.
Yeah, so would we.
So why? Because
I just wondered.
Just wondering? Okay. So this is very interesting. You know that I had read in an interview, I think I talked to Arlo about it. You know, he Huntington's career runs in his family. His father died of that, Woody Guthrie, and he never had himself tested. That's what I understand. And I always thought that was very interesting because there's some things in this life you don't want to know. Now, suppose you take the test and it says you're going to live another 5 years. That's fine. But what if you take the test and say, dan, 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 dan.
So you got a year.
Yeah.
You take out a huge loan, right?
Well, you could.
You don't have to pay it back. You'd be dead.
I see. Well, Ray, as always,
Ray's got
right.
It figured out.
But
I want to know if insurance is going to cover this test.
This is great. And what happens?
No, they don't.
If you fail the test, then what happens?
They don't. I have. That's right. That's one of the reasons you don't want to take it, because then if you're asked a question, you may not want to answer it on some form somewhere. But right. I did take the C-reactive protein test years ago, and that was one of the.
Gosh.
That's one of the.
You are such a hypochondriac.
Oh my gosh! He's the hypochondriac in chief.
Well, I didn't recommend it. My doctor, Dr. Paul Lemansky, recommended I take it, and I took it. I thought it was a good idea, and I came out very well on that one.
You could pass this
test.
You could pass this test with flying colors, walk out of the doctor's office, and get hit by a bus.
Yeah. Or drop dead. Just drop dead, period.
Well, let me ask the two more sane panelists here today. would you want to know if you were going to die in less than 5 years? Would you want that information? Would you? Philosophically, would you want that information?
No. I would like to die in the middle of doing something that I love doing. I'd like to be, you know, in a foreign country fighting for freedom of the press and get shot or something like that in the midst of doing what I love to do.
I've often thought about dying during the panel.
But what?
You thought it was killing you?
Yeah.
It's just killing me.
But what if? But what
best
if?
Best answer.
What if you could have a diagnostic test which just says, do some things, but don't do other things. Don't you see? So if you might not
Alan,
want to do those.
It's
what?
Alan, what? Just live.
Eat less.
Live every day.
Exercise.
I do that.
We know the diagnostics. We know what to do.
Well,
what more could a test show?
Oh, well, for example,
lose weight. You've done that.
Strenuous physical activity, for example.
Oh yeah.
Under a certain kind of.
Okay,
regime.
Teresa, we haven't heard your answer philosophically. Would you want to know that you were going to die within 5 years?
No, I just live every day.
Exactly.
Live every day, and who knows the accuracy of the test? It's just all a crapshoot. Just live every day.
Exactly, but it does give some people things to think about, right?
Right.
Right, Alan?
Yeah.
All right, the email address here is panel@wamc.org. Any more email here? We're almost done. We have a few more.
Okay, very quickly. Rosemary is correct. Rosemary is correct. Trump is cunning. To assuage dissatisfaction.
Alan said that.
We both said it, I believe. To assuage dissatisfaction in the 40%, he will blame minorities and immigrants for their problems in carefully worded tweets, which will be taken as license for class warfare.
Do you think his tweets are, that's a great question. Do you think his tweets so far have been carefully worded? Anybody?
Yes, I do.
Interesting.
I do.
Yeah, I think very strategic.
Yes.
Gorilla dust.
What'd you say?
Gorilla dust. Very strategic.
There are 142 characters. You can't write that without figuring out every word. So
does he
yes.
have help?
This man has
no.
not had a press conference
I wondered
since
about that
July.
Myself,
right, there
he
you
has
go.
He's not had a press conference since July. Gingrich and others in the last few days have said that why should he ever have another one? He's sure. going to have one on the 15th. Will he take questions? Mm. Is it a press conference or, is he? This is how he's going to communicate to the American public. So it's up to all of us. To then raise questions about
I
what he's
I also
saying.
Don't take his word of upcoming press conferences seriously, including the one where his children next month are going to talk about his conflicts. If you remember, Melania was going to have a press conference about how she's not an illegal alien. Sorry for the term, but that's okay. What Trump uses. That never happened. I think he promises these things and then thinks that we're going to forget about it.
Let's see what he does about the post office building, his hotel in Washington, D.C. So he signed a contract 2 years ago for the post office that he's turned into a hotel in Washington, D.C. Very specific provision, language is clear, that no elected official, and I'm reading this, of the government of the United States shall be admitted to any share or part of this lease or any benefit that may arise therefrom. So he has signed this lease. And on January 20th, he is in violation of the lease. So if he's serious about conflicts of interest, one of the first things he will do is turn that holding over not to his children, but to someone else. He will give up the post office hotel. Now, that's just a small thing that he might do. But if he's serious about conflicts of interest, let's see if he's serious
about this about conflict.
How does the blind trust? Go ahead.
He's in clear contract violation because it says it may not benefit a member of the government, and he's
an elected
the top
official.
Member. So the government right now should be declaring that lease null and void right now.
He's not
of course, what they said was, we're going to talk to the ethics department about it, which doesn't do anything except set policy. It doesn't enforce.
Do any of you know how a blind trust actually works? Now, we've heard this with regard to Trump's business holdings. Presidents and other senior officials have had these in years past. How do they work? Do you still, in essence, own the holdings and you come back to them later?
Yes.
But it depends on what you do. Some people sell all of their shares and whatever they own, mm-hmm. and then they hand it over to someone else, and that person mm-hmm. invests it, and they don't know how it's invested.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Trump hotels, he says, he's going to give it to his children, or if presumably that's what he's going to say. But he knows full well where his holdings are.
How would you enforce the children? Are they going to never visit him, never call him on the phone?
Though.
So how do you know that he
it
is not
work
advising
with the kinds
them?
Of, I mean, this is what we it said before
work.
The election. He is riddled with conflicts of interest. And you've already seen the implications for that in terms of the people he's met with and the deals that they've done. And the check on this is the House and the Senate. And you had Jason Chaffetz, who for over and over and over again, he's talked about, he held hearing after hearing on Secretary Clinton and said that he was going to once she was elected, if she was elected. Mm-hmm. But now this week, when asked if he's going to hold hearings on Trump and his conflicts of interest, all of a sudden the watchdog, lapdog, I don't know, no watchdog anymore.
Well, Trump says, and it's appearing on the crawl on CNN now, according to the Washington Post, he vows to remove himself from businesses. We shall see what he does. Alan, a letter or two, and then we're out of here.
All right. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Health care and health insurance are not synonymous. It's all about money and not really about actual care. The insurance industry is disgusting, and that's from Gloria in Vermont.
Well, if the preventive care that you get now, if you have a pre-existing condition, all of that's going to go away if they follow the prices proposals.
Samantha says, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop for the Trump base. Never has there been a more appropriate word, base, indeed. But I wonder if it will. The sheer willful ignorance that is happening in our country today is baffling. I feel we have entered the age of emotional reason. The question of whether other presidents-elect have faced such scrutiny during transition is valid. But I think it is so irresistible because everyone wants to form a sense of what's in store. And time after time, we hear the phrase, we don't know what he's going to do. So-called reporting in this election has fallen somewhere, in my view, of weather forecasting. Apologies to our wonderful Paul Cayano.
Nostradamus would be helpful.
Read the contract in America that it's posted on his website, if you want to have a sense of what he's going to do. Look at what the people, look at what Congressman Price has proposed and around health care, if you want to know it. Look at the tax proposals that he has, if you want to know what he's going
right,
to do.
Right, Teresa, you have to believe. For people who say, he doesn't mean it, that's just wrong.
Right.
And we have seen it in other places in the world in history.
If he nominates nominated Tom Price to be head of Health and Human Services. We know what Tom Price has proposed to do. And if you have a pre-existing condition, you have a problem now. If you rely on preventative health care, you have a problem now. For years, women mm-hmm. paid more for health insurance mm-hmm. than men did, and that was changed with the Affordable Care Act, and that's going to be reversed now.
All right. If you're a young kid and you can't afford it, you cannot rely on your parents till age 26.
If you are ill or older.
Yeah, well, thank you, panel. That was a lot of fun today, and we appreciate all of you being here. We're out of time. Teresa Bourgeois, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, thank you. Thank you all for listening. Now, remember, the second half of the roundtable is straight ahead. Our email address here is panel@wamc.org. We'll be back.